to listen to the Left Traffic Podcast.
What is up, Lap Traffic Nation? Welcome to episode number 80 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd. I can't believe I've been doing this thing 80 times. That is absolutely crazy. I am live on location. I packed up the NASCAR Man Cave, and I am setting up shop here just a few blocks away at the fabulous 24 Seconds Bar and Grill in Berkeley, Michigan. You guys know if I am not in the Man Cave, odds are you will find me here. So big thanks to Bob and the staff here at 24 Seconds for letting me come and record here tonight. To be honest, I really didn't give Bob a choice because him and I are pretty good friends. So I'm like, dude, I'm going to come record a show. And he was like, all right. Now, the big question is that I got to get Bob over here at some point in time tonight is Bob has a Hall of Fame wall on the hallway here at 24 Seconds where he takes pictures with any celebrities or sports guys that come in. And so the big question that I got to ask Bob is if I now get to make the Hall of Fame wall with doing the podcast here. Something tells me he's going to tell me to go shove it. But we will get to that. I hope everyone is having a great week. I am back for my second straight week of a Thursday extra content show. And next week will be the third straight week with an extra content show. If you missed last week's extra content show, Michigan native and winner of the Firecracker 400, Eric Jones, was on. So go make sure you check that out. And make sure you check out this week's show, Tuesday. That's been up a couple days now. Very familiar voice on that show this past Tuesday with great friend of the show, Sherwin from the PETM podcast. But joining me here live at 24 Seconds, he was born and raised on the east side of Detroit, played football for the University of Michigan, go blue, and played for the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears, and the Detroit Lions, forward down the field, and now owner of Julius Curry Racing, Lap Traffic Nation. Please welcome Julius Curry. My man, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
I am awesome. Thank you so much for coming out tonight, coming out to 24 Seconds. How's life? How's things going?
Man, things are going great. Just got involved in NASCAR World Cup and Truck Series this year, so I'm pretty excited about the season and how everything's been going. And can't wait for the season to continue to grow and the team get better and better. And now we got two trucks out there, so I'm pretty excited. And Josh Rayom is my driver, but also he has the 34 truck. So we're working out some things where we'll do some sponsor this year with the both trucks.
That is so cool. All right, so Julius and I tonight, we're going to talk a variety of things, not just NASCAR. We're going to talk growing up in Detroit, his college career, pro career. Going to talk about how he decided to get into NASCAR, and a little bit later his driver Josh Rayom is going to call in, and the three of us are going to talk a little bit of NASCAR. Julius, does that sound good to you, sir?
Oh, sounds great.
All right, first things first, let's get into your childhood. Talk to me a little bit about that. Growing up in Detroit, where'd you play high school and all that good stuff?
Well, I grew up in Detroit, on the east side of Detroit, off Chalmers and Outer Drive, which is
all right, hold on. My uncle. All right. The mere fact you said Outer Drive. You know what he used to tell me if you're on Outer Drive?
What's that?
You're driving out of your way.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was a little rough back then.
So Chalmers Outer Drive.
Yeah. And so I wound up going to St. Matthews High Elementary School.
Okay.
And then I wound up going to Bishop Gallagher High School and later graduating high school and going to University of Michigan and playing football there and also graduating with a degree in sports management, marketing, communication.
That's awesome, man. So I know you played some ball in Chicago and Wisconsin, and we'll get to that here in a couple minutes, but you've obviously spent some time away from the city and now back here in Detroit. The comeback of the city of Detroit, the downtown area, is absolutely remarkable. My wife and I love going down there all the time. Was it a real big shock and transition change for you to see how the city itself has grown maybe over the last decade or so?
Yes, I think that over the last 10 years, I think the city of Detroit has gotten a lot better. We did have a meltdown back in 2006 and 2007, which now the economy is going a little bit quicker, and we got a mayor in there that's doing a lot of things in the city, along with Dan Gilbert, who's the owner of Quicken Loans and Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Illich family are doing a lot of things, and we just have a lot of movement going on and a lot of good synergy down there.
It's really awesome. All right, so let's talk some Michigan football. First off, you played with a friend of mine that comes here to 24 Seconds every once in a while. Do you remember a guy by the name of Charles Young III?
Oh, yeah, CY3.
Hell yeah, man.
He actually wore a 33 number.
Yeah, so. Truck number. Yeah, so Charles comes in here every once in a while, but I know he's busy with the family, and he's actually working, I think, with the Detroit City Council in some regard.
Yeah, he's
doing downtown.
He's working down there. He's doing a pretty good job, and I'm happy to see that he's using his relationships and his degree at the University of Michigan to be down in the city and be right here right now at this time to help make the city a better place.
It's awesome. All right, so you played for U of M from 99 to 2002. Tell everyone a little bit about the positions you played and what it was like playing at U of M.
Well, when I first got to University of Michigan, I was recruited as an athlete. So the summer of my freshman year, Lloyd Carr didn't know what position he was going to have me in. So I came in and started as a running back, wound up doing some wide receiver, played a little bit of cornerback, safety, nickelback. And so at that point, I just started to learn everything. I said, I just need to know everything. As far as all the skill positions so that I could put myself in the best position to help my team.
That's awesome. So when we look at some of the accolades of Michigan while you were there, 4 bowl appearances, 1 Orange Bowl, 3 Citrus with 3 wins. Talk about what it was like to play in some bowl games at University of Michigan.
Man, it was great. First bowl game, honestly, was the against Alabama. When we beat Alabama at the last second, and that was a great game. It was the first time University of Michigan played Alabama, and our defense played great, our offense played great. And then, like you say, we later on played Arkansas, beat them, played Auburn, beat them. We played Tennessee, we lost to Tennessee, and then I think we finished up with Florida. So we beat those guys. So I was a fifth year senior. So out of 5 years, we won 4 bowl games and lost 1. So
that's awesome. You know, so you obviously never got to play at the level that you were able to compete at college football or anything like that. You know, but I still remember a few glory moments that I had back in high school and that kind of stuff. Like playing at the level that you did. You know, are those memories always, like, right there in the back of your mind? Or, like, does it take someone to ask and question for you to, like, be able to reminisce like that?
You know what? I think it kind of does. You know, every conversation, especially in the state of Michigan, when we meet different people, different fans remember from certain plays. So just like the 1997 game when Charles Woodson took it back for the interception for the punt return for a touchdown.
Sure.
That's a play that you kind of always remember. But the major play that most people talk about with me is the pick six against Ohio State back in 2001.
Yes, sir.
At the horseshoe, and it was a pretty pivotal point of the game. And I think that's the play that a lot of people remember me by. And it's the last time we beat Ohio State at Ohio State. So this year, I think, you know, we're going to do some great things, and I'm hoping to beat Ohio State.
That's awesome. I love it. All right. So, all right, you sparked a couple questions for me there. All right. You talk about playing in the shoe. Talk about beating Alabama. What was maybe one of the more hostile road games that you can remember going and playing on the road and dealing with a tough crowd, dealing with some tough, unruly fans? Like, I'm sure you had your few out there.
Yeah, we've definitely had our few. One game that I can – kind of remember, and it goes back to that same game when we played Ohio State in 2001. That game was very, very stressful. Before the game, of course, it was cold as heck out there, and we're in Ohio, and those fans were probably the loudest fans that we had besides Syracuse when I was a sophomore, and those fans are very loud, and not only that. After the game, we took cold showers. So
that's true. They do mess with you on the road.
Yeah, they do. They definitely made sure we had cold showers.
So talk about recruiting a little bit, and maybe talk about how it's kind of transitioned from how when you were recruited to what the recruitment process is now.
Well, back in 1995, I was actually recruited by Lloyd Carr, who was actually the defensive back coordinator for the University of Michigan. Right before he got the job at the university. And so Lloyd was kind of the go-to guy. And then once he became the head coach, Jim Herman came into my high school, and he took over the role that Lloyd Carr had as the recruiting guy. And so I kind of already had my mind made up that I was going to go to University of Michigan as a sophomore.
Okay.
So
did you have some other offers out there? Or?
Yeah, I had Tennessee, Alabama, Florida State, Miami. So all the big colleges pretty much in the United States, they were all after me.
That's awesome. That's got to be an awesome feeling, man.
Yeah, it was great. But the thing about it was a little bit different with me is I committed so early to the University of Michigan because, I mean, that's just the kind of guy I am. Once I say I'm going to do something, I try to commit to it. If it doesn't happen exactly how I want it to happen, just know that, and anybody who knows me, I'm working my butt off to try to make it happen.
That's so cool. All right, so let's talk about, I would have to imagine you've got some vivid memories of some of the games you've played in. Describe walking out onto the field, hitting the Go Blue, We Support You sign for your first game. That had to be an incredible experience and all that.
Yeah, as a freshman, when we came in, and I think the first time that I did that, I want to say that we played Syracuse, and we played Notre Dame at Notre Dame. So first time I did, I think it was a Syracuse game, and we actually lost that game. But to come out to the stadium, I think it was 110,000 people that game, and it was like one of the most fans that we had in history. I think it may be 112,000 that game. But it was definitely a feeling like I got to prove myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I think all the guys that were freshmen that year felt the same thing. And at that time, we were defending national champs. So to come in as a freshman class and have to defend a national championship with our safety, Marcus Ray, as the head, as the leader of the defense, it was pretty tough, you know? But coming out of that tunnel was probably one of the best feelings I ever had, but also kind of had, you know, had my stomach grumbling
scared
a little
shitless
bit.
Too.
Yeah, I definitely was, you know, and I think, and I was on kickoff, so, you know, after kickoff, you kind of get that first hit and, you know, shoulder pads get the popping.
Yep.
And then, then after that, you kind of focusing on your job and roles and responsibilities for the game.
That's all. Oh, that's so cool, man. All right, so Michigan. We got two rivalries, depending on who you ask. All right. So back in your day, from a fan perspective, it sounds like you guys didn't consider MSU as big a rival as OSU. And as time has progressed, those Spartans over in Lansing, they like to talk. Now, you guys, I believe, went 2-2 with MSU and OSU. Talk about the rivalry with the in-state, with MSU, and compare that to the rival with OSU.
Wow. Well, honestly, those, like you said, those two rivalries go 1-2. And depending on who you're talking to, they flip-flop.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely the whole Ohio State rivalry is one of the biggest because Bo Schembechler came from Ohio State. And Michigan State, being in the state of Michigan, is definitely, you know, 1-2. When I was playing at Michigan, and we played Michigan State, it definitely was a game that we definitely didn't look over. It was like one of the games we were like, you know, if we lose this, then we lose bragging rights on the state. And so that was something that we wanted to make sure, you know, that we did. And it was tough. You know, Michigan State beat us, I want to say they beat us once out of four out of 5 years.
I think it was the first year you guys played them too.
Well, and
it was
like a
10, it was like a 10-9, 10-7 game or something like that.
They did beat us. I forgot at their place.
Yeah.
They beat us at their place twice. And the second time they won, that's questionable.
I know what you're talking. You know, it's crazy how seconds just, I don't know, just linger on, you know. They just go.
So I'm going to say we lost once to Michigan State.
I'm with you on that one. I agree. So OSU, one of the bigger rivalries in college football with OSU there. You mentioned going in the shoe a little bit earlier. Talk about what it's like hosting a team like OSU at the Big House.
Man, it's tough. I mean, we lost to Ohio State 1 year when I was playing at the university. And like I said, it was a tough loss. I mean, for guys to come in and beat you, you know, it was a close game. But for them to come in and beat us, you know, it left a bad taste in our mouth.
Sure.
It was something that, you know, if you defending your home, you know, just like you a grown man, you defend your home, that's our home.
Yep.
You know, and to lose against Ohio State in Michigan is something that we definitely don't want to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. All right. So Michigan's had some struggles as of late since Lloyd Carr has left. Rich Rod struggled. Brady Hoke struggled. And now even with Harbaugh. But the pressure for a coach to perform at Michigan's overwhelming. What was it like to be coached by Lloyd Carr?
Man, it was a great feeling. Lloyd Carr, not only was he a coach, but he was like a team dad. You know, he was that guy that talked to you like your dad would, or like, you know, or your grandfather would.
Sure.
Because he wanted us to focus on academics and understand that we have to win. You know, and that was our motto, just win. And we had our team goals, we had our personal goals, and that was what we wanted to do. Win or lose, our goal was to play 100%, go out there and leave it on the field.
That's awesome. So when we look at Michigan over the last really decade here with three different coaches, something Michigan's not used to from a school perspective, if we look at Harbaugh, for example, I love Harbaugh. I was ecstatic when Harbaugh got announced as the head coach. If I were to say, and like I said, I'm talking from strictly fan perspective here. If I look at Harbaugh, he's the quarterback guy. And here we are going into his third season, and he hasn't developed his own quarterback yet.
Well, that's tough. These guys that we have now, I think, like you said, competition's high. We have three good quarterbacks in there that's going to be competing to be the number one guys. And it was just like when I was at the University of Michigan with the Tom Brady, Drew Henson thing. And those guys had to prove themselves. Like, Tom was a fourth-year senior, but he still had to prove himself. You know, he sat behind Dreisbach and he sat behind Greasy for a second. Then he had his opportunity. And I think he did exactly what he needed to do. He was the senior that understood he had to split time with a freshman. He might have not liked it, but it was the best thing for the team at the time.
Sure.
And I think that if the guys look back at that and say, you know what, it was the best thing for us to do at that time. And I think, you know, it was good. So right now with these guys competing, that's football.
Sure.
And the expectation is for the position. And if you don't do what you got to do for the team, then they need to have someone that can come in and be just as good for the team. And I think that, you know, as Michigan fans and former players, it's always for the team, the team, the team. And if we all remember that, then we'll be back at the Big Ten championship again.
I like that. I like that. All right, so you mentioned Tom. I am a diehard Tom Brady and New England Patriots guy. And I'll tell you why. The very first Michigan game I went to, my grandpa took me to, you know, I was middle school, high school, and Tom Brady was quarterback. It's my first football game ever seeing in person. I had not seen the Lions play before. I'm at the Big House for the first time. Tom Brady's quarterback. And I fell in love with the game, and I fell in love with that arm. And I have been a diehard Tom Brady fan, which is a Patriots fan. Talk about what it was like playing with him. Did you have a relationship with Tom Brady at all or no?
Well, our team was very close-knit. Tom was actually a quiet guy during that time when we were at Michigan, but because he was so focused on trying to be the best quarterback at the time. He was doing a lot of stuff with Scott Leffler, who was the quarterbacks, you know, helping out with the quarterbacks when he was there. And he also still had to be a leader with Drew because Drew was a freshman.
Yep.
And as much as they had a competition, they had to understand how we're going to work together. They had two different, you know, quarterback styles, but they both had to perform at specific times, and they both did. So, you know, I look at it like Tom did what he needed to do. He led. He was the comeback king in college.
Yeah.
If you guys remember that, Tom always was the guy that if you put him in the fourth quarter, we may be down by 7. If we're down by 13, we got a chance.
It's almost like kind of Stafford.
Yeah.
Stafford-esque with the Lions, like – he holds the record for most fourth quarter comebacks over like the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So very Matt Stafford like there.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I could literally talk Michigan here all day with you. So I want to wrap up college football talk with what is your standout moment from your college career?
Goes back to the same thing. Ohio State.
Ohio State.
Game, to be able to perform at that game at that moment for your team is something that, you know, we had 4 defensive turnovers that game. So Larry Foote had a great game. Dan Romashek, Victor Hobson got a fumble. I mean, it was a lot of good things that went on in that game that, you know, that were great. Anthony Thomas broke the rushing yardage. So that game was just so historic. It has to be one of my favorite moments at Michigan.
That's awesome. Okay. All right. Let's talk a little pro. You played a little bit with Green Bay, Chicago, and the Lions. Take us through your transition through the NFL.
Well, I got picked up after the draft as a free agent. I got hurt at the University of Michigan 2 years in a row. So I missed 12 games in 2 years. I had a shoulder injury, then I tore my MCL. So to come out and have an opportunity to play for the Chicago Bears, Dick Duron gave me a call after the draft and said, would I like to come out to the Bears, and I did. So once I got out to the Bears, I fell in love with Chicago. Brian Urlacher was an amazing
beast,
leader.
Man.
Yeah, we had Lance Briggs was a rookie, and he turned into an all-pro linebacker in the NFL. We had Rex Grossman in as a young guy coming in as a quarterback with Cordell Stewart starting at the time. And we had a great team, man. We had guys out there, Mike Brown, who was the leader of the defense and defensive backs in Urlacher. So playing with those guys and Alex Smith, those guys, Ted Washington, you know, those guys were legends in football and for the Chicago Bears. Then I wound up going to the Detroit Lions because Dick Duron was coming to Detroit Lions as the defense coordinator. And so got to Detroit. Played there for two seasons, and most of the time I was actually on the practice squad, which was actually a great thing for me because I wanted to focus more on an executive side of things and in sport because I had a degree in sports management. And I knew that my football career may not last long because sure. I had two injuries that already were pretty much, you know, football threatening to my career. So to get in there and get the minimum of what I needed to get in there to retire was my goal. And not only that, was to be the best player at practice. And a lot of people who understand what I'm saying, you win games at practice. And if you can give the offense a good look or the special teams a good look, that's the best thing that a team can ask you to do. You know, to give Joey a good look, to give Tom a good look, to give Drew Henson a good look, to make sure that on Sunday or on Saturdays, depending on if we're in college or pro, that those guys are ready.
So it's funny that you say that, and we're going to get into some racing talk here a little bit different in terms of the difference in terms of what practice from a stick and ball sport means versus the difference on the racetrack.
Yeah.
Because on the racetrack, practice is me, myself, and I.
Yes.
But practice on a football field is all about the team. It's, all right, I may not be playing on Sunday, but if I'm out here through walkthroughs with the team,
yeah,
and I can help them prepare better for Sunday or for Saturday, yeah, that's a world of difference.
Yeah, it definitely is different. But the thing that I'm trying to do with the team this year and after this race in Michigan, I'm going to start focusing more on is actually everyone understanding that team. Team is everything. Just like the offensive line and defensive line in football, that's your pit crew. That's your crew chief. That's your jack man. That's, yep, your rear tire changer, your,
yes,
front tire changer,
yeah,
and your tire carrier.
Yeah.
Those guys have roles and responsibilities that the driver needs to make sure you do a great stop so that we have a chance to win the race.
Absolutely.
If it's one lap to go and we have a 15-second pit stop or a 30-second pit stop, that 15-second difference is going to be the difference between winning the race and losing the race.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, so after the Lions, you go over to Green Bay for a little bit, right?
Yeah, it was great when I got to the Packers. Aaron Rodgers was a rookie. Brett Favre was the starting quarterback at the time. And I was there for two seasons, and I really enjoyed that city and that community because what it taught me was really community, like how it was at University of Michigan. You know, that team was owned by the community. 90,000
yeah, right,
people put up $500 to have that team stay there. That's very, very community.
Sure.
And so I look at that and I say, wow, how can I apply a lot of these different things that I learned throughout my sports career, and how can I bring those same ideologies to racing? And so that's what I'm doing right now. And
that's
it's taking,
awesome.
And it's going a little bit at a time, but now I think guys are starting to see that we have to work as a team. If the driver has to go out there and meet with sponsors, the owner, me as an owner, have to go out there and work with business partners and bring guys to the table so that we all can work together to produce some B2B or a company just want to come in and sponsor and promote their company, then that's what we're doing. And we have to work as a team, and that's something that Josh and I are going to start really working more toward, is making sure that we're all on the same page every week.
Very cool. I like that. All right, so I want to wrap up our football talk with maybe a little bit comparison here. So I'm a fan of football. My Lions season tickets came in the mail yesterday.
Oh, great.
Fan of NASCAR. And you've been on the professional and playing side of things for a very long time. Can you compare the NASCAR fan versus the football fan?
You know what? It's very similar. I can't say that. The difference between what NASCAR is that before the race, you have a little more interactive with the team, because usually before a football game, you're on the bus with the team. You kind of keep to yourselves. But before the race, we got to drive through the crowd, go through the tunnel. We got to get all the equipment there. In football, it kind of already is done. So yep. The shoulder pads, the helmets are there. The lockers are nice and clean. But in racing, the team does everything. We bring in there the pit box, and, you know, we bring in the car. We do some testing. We go out to the track. And it's kind of like the same thing as like the pre-game rituals and, you know, the pre-warm-up. The guys we do, instead of warm-ups, we got testing.
That's cool.
Qualifying.
Yep.
So it's
you're out similar. There a little bit more with everybody.
Yes.
All right, so I was just handed a note here, and it was by a gentleman who is a diehard Packers fan, and he would like to know whether or not your favorite team to play for was the Bears, the Packers, or the Lions. Say the University of Michigan.
You know what? That is. That definitely is my most favorite. But what I can say between the three teams, they all had three different styles of business, the way they ran their business. And I liked all three styles. But it did teach me what Bo Schembechler said. After you leave Michigan, it's about business. It's about a check. It's about a contract. And it's hard to get to the team aspect when you have the money aspect in there.
Sure.
And it's not about just heart.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. All right. So how does a college football and NFL player come to own a NASCAR truck team?
Well, racing has always been in my blood. My dad raced cars in the Detroit on the east side. My uncles raced cars on the east side of Detroit, right off Otter Drive and Mound Road, or either off 6 Mile, between 6 and 7 Mile and French Road, which is right next to the city airport. So they did racing all growing up. And I would be the guy after they crash or something happened. We'll repaint the car a different primer color. You know,
little Bondo.
We'll put a couple switches on there to make sure next time, you know, the brake lights won't come on.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I learned a little bit about, you know, getting away after the race.
Okay. All right.
But now that I'm involved, the new thing to me now is get guys off the streets and get them to the track. If you guys really want to be in racing, get off the streets and get to the track. Street racing's fun, it's great, but just like other stuff, things change, and we want to get it to an opportunity where guys can really utilize the assets that we have in the state of Michigan, and not even just the state of Michigan, but all over the country. We got racetracks that need race car drivers.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah. I was a couple weeks ago up at Birch Run Speedway up there, you know, little 3/8 mile kind of thing, you know. And people will come and watch good racing. People love one of the things I can say about the Detroit areas is I'm bummed there's not a, you know, track in the Detroit area or close to Detroit. You know, you got to drive a good 40 minutes outside of the city to get to a track, you know, which is a bummer because, you know, local track racing, whether it's dirt, asphalt, it's a cheap, good time. You know, you can get in a track cheap. You can get some beers and some food and hang out on a Friday, Saturday night and see some good racing.
Yeah, one thing that I'm doing right now, I just got hooked up with the Silver Air Patrol through the Bishop Gallagher Football Alumni Association. And at the city airport, they're going to have about 4 times a year, they're going to have opportunity to do drag racing.
Oh, cool.
So that's something that if guys really want to get involved, somehow go up to the airport, ask about, inquire about how can you get involved and get there, you know, get off the streets so that we can make the streets safer. One, because it wasn't safe when I was doing that back in the days with my family members and, you know, and friends. But now we have assets. And, you know, and before it was like, where do we go? Milan? You know, now we can go to Milan. Now we can go to those different tracks.
Well, and Woodward, they opened up their
M1 Concourse.
M1 Concourse, little store. And even during Woodward Weekend, they actually closed a part of Woodward off to do some drag racing out there, too.
Yeah.
That's, I got to imagine, interesting out there.
I love it.
So talk about the risk-reward being a little bit of a smaller team going out there running against the likes of KBM or like a Thor Motorsports.
Well, it's tough. Those guys, KBM has four trucks out there. Three are in the top 15. You know, Kyle Busch Motorsports has the best chassis on the market. Not only that, these guys are racing great engines, M-War engines. Those engines take 8 weeks to make. If you don't have the relationships in the beginning of the season to get those kind of assets, you're going to be in the middle of the track, which is kind of where we are right now, which is a great position because Josh is new as a new owner, and me coming in, I'm a new owner as well. So I own the 33 truck and Josh owns the 34 truck. But we're working together. The Rayon Brothers Racing has been doing a great job this year on managing the race operations on race day. So that's their role and responsibility for the race team. And they operate separately. So, you know, and that left it open so that we can see, you know, at the end of the year, how do we want to work on making this relationship better, and how can we, or should we go our separate ways? But right now, I feel that we're going to be a strong team next year. We're going to be running two numbers, and the rest of the season, we're going to be running the 33 and the 34 so that we can get the 34 out there and get some points underneath that belt. And when Josh and I worked out, we worked out a deal where we're going to swap points at the end of the season. When I first got in NASCAR, I came in this season, I mean, with Josh, as sponsoring a few races, and the magic number was 5. And after the 5th race, I was like, you know, I want to own the number. And that was talked about before the season started. And so we both have been working very hard to live up to the agreement that we both made with each other. And Josh is doing a great job out there, racing. And I couldn't ask for anything else.
That's awesome. So when you look at switching points and all that kind of stuff, how well does NASCAR work with you in terms of, you know, being a smaller team and kind of finessing things a little bit?
Well, we haven't really been dealing a lot with NASCAR itself, with them being in our business. Every team is ran independent. So we all handle our own business. We're using the platform with NASCAR, with them having events and having the dates and having us an opportunity where we're a part of their racing and they're their sanctioning body. But as far as running the team, Josh and I, we do everything.
Okay.
Like KBM runs their team. They don't call NASCAR and say this and that. They have the rules and regulations. We follow the rules.
You're following the system.
Yep. And then what we have to do is we have to make our team better every week.
So rest of the season, are you going to have two cars out at each?
Yeah, we're going to try to have both trucks out there.
Okay.
Depending on if we don't crash.
Details. You know, details.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. But, yeah, we're going to have two trucks out there. We're going to have a 33 and a 34. And I was excited this weekend to see Josh in a different role. We had two new drivers come in. Mitchell raced the 33 and Abby raced the 34. And it was a great experience. We had two dirt guys that came out there, and those are dirt guys. You know, Josh wanted to race the race, but we had a guy come in and he had some money from a sponsor, and we gave him an opportunity to get on the track. And that's what you do in racing. You give other guys opportunity to come out there and help the sport get better. And Josh did a great job taking in the role. Josh actually was a jack man for the race.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. I didn't realize that. So I want to ask you two things real quick. Number one, I want to get your take on, from a pit perspective, there's a lot of guys that are crewmen that play college ball.
Yes. What I've noticed over the last couple years, just me being at the racetrack, specifically in truck series, because that's where my focus was.
Sure.
They have a lot of guys, a lot of diversity, I'm going to say, in truck series right now. I haven't really been watching ARCA a lot, but I've been kind of focusing on truck because that's where I want to be.
Yep.
We're going to work on some ARCA stuff. But right now, there's a lot of safeties, linebackers, defensive line. We have a University of Michigan former defensive lineman that's on their pit crew. We have a lot of safeties. linebackers that are just amazing, you know, Jackman and Gassman, you know, because they're linebackers. They pick that big gas tank up and put that gas in there quick.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great transition for guys who, one, don't make it to the pros, or two, after they make it, what am I going to do next?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of those guys, a lot of guys don't succeed well in non-team environments. And I think NASCAR is that environment where guys can get back into that team.
Absolutely. So when you look at, like, for example, your points perspective, championship perspective with 2017 and the points you're earning, you know, obviously the goal when you're racing is to get the checkered flag. What is your current short-term goal for the rest of 2018 and as you look into 2019?
Well, the goal this season and that Josh and I and my partner, Pat Cole, we all got together and said, we want to race the full season. And that's what we're doing with the 33 truck. And that was the agreement that we made.
Sure.
So Josh is doing everything he can and everything he's, you know, that we agreed to. And I'm doing the same thing. We're working hard. And the thing that we're both finding out is that it's not easy to find money. You know, that's one thing that we're all in NASCAR, we're all seeing. And I think that what I want to bring is more B2B stuff going on in NASCAR.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And not just looking for a sponsor to come on and just give you some cash, but actually us going out, being more involved in the products that they're selling so that we can do more B2B and so that we can, you know, we can grow with the brand instead of just having them on the car.
It's building that relationship.
Yes.
You know, anybody, and I'm going to transition over to Cup here for a second and say anybody can go be Jimmy Johnson and get Lowe's to come on for a full season.
Right.
And, you know, that makes it very easy on the team. That's not the case with most truck teams outside of KBM and Thor and all of that. Most of these teams, and even in the Xfinity series, these guys are going out there and trying to find even local sponsors for that upcoming race at that track, trying to get local sponsors on the car, which, you know, that can help develop the relationship for future races at that track and within that industry maybe branch out and build from that regard.
Yeah. The thing that makes our team different, with me being an owner, is that we can go on after diversity dollars. So we're going to be contacting these companies saying, hey, we know you guys have, you know, a budget for diversity. Let us be that team. Let us be that team to put your products out there. We got Josh Rayom. Josh is a great story. Josh grew up in Nigeria.
And, you know, Josh is going to call in here in a few minutes. And I actually have that on there. I was doing my research, and I'm like, this guy spent 13 years in Nigeria. I got to find out what happened and how that happened.
Exactly.
So I can't wait to hear him talk about that.
And his nickname is the African Squirrel. So, it, you know, when he told me that, I just cracked up, and I was like, man, that's what's up.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome. All right, so you'll be at MIS in a couple weeks.
Yes.
I'll be at MIS in a couple weeks. Something tells me we're going to hook up at MIS in a couple weeks.
Yeah, let's hang out. I'll definitely come on out.
Awesome. So we've got Josh, who's going to call in here in a couple minutes, and let's talk a little bit about the actual season that you guys have had this year and go from there.
The season is actually going pretty good. Right now we're in 27th in points, which is a good place for me. Out of 46 trucks that are out there, to be 27th in the country, my first year, you know, in business, and Josh going out there and being the youngest, actually, at the time, Josh was the youngest owner in NASCAR history at 25 years
old. That's crazy.
So for Josh to, you know, for Josh and I, us to get together, we got a young guy and we got an African-American guy that's trying to get in the sport to bring a different group of people and a different culture to the racetrack so that we can get more fans.
Absolutely.
If you watch some of the races, sometimes the fans aren't there. And so for me to be able to go to colleges, go to universities and go to inner cities to bring those different people to the racetrack and give them an opportunity to experience a family environment. And because that's what racing is all about, family.
Yep.
The Rayon brothers racing, they're family.
Yeah. Their dad started the team back when they were kart racing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. Well, Josh is going to call in here in just a second. You guys won't know any delay, but I'll be right back here with Julius and Josh. But first, I want to hit a couple social media things real quick here. Everyone, make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you follow on Twitter, @LapTrafficPC. Make sure you subscribe, download on iTunes, Podbean, Spreaker, Stitcher, you name it. You can find the show out there. I'm going to have a new giveaway out here in just another week or so. Don't forget, if you want some stickers and koozies, check out the website, fill out the contact page. I will get those out to you. And just a reminder, next week, next Thursday, the listener call-in show, I've got about 5-6 people signed up. I'll take one or two more, and we'll get that going for next week. So if you want to be a part of the listener call-in show next Thursday, July 26th, hit the website, fill out the contact page, and I will reach out to you and get you on the books. All right, I will be right back with Josh and Julius. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, joining Julius and I on the line, driver of the number 33 Camping World Truck Series with Rayum Brothers Racing, partnered with Julius Curry Raking, making his Lap Traffic debut. Josh Rayum, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
Thanks for having me on. It's going good. I actually just got back from Eldora, so a little tired, ready for some sleep, and ready to start working on our plan for our next race at Pocono.
That's awesome. You know, I actually was at the Eldora race the last 2 years. What an awesome track between the fans. Tony Stewart doing an incredible job out there with the track. Talk about what it's like to be at a more short track style of a track for the truck series.
I think it's great. I think this series should go to more short tracks, especially with the Camping World Truck Series being, you know, the bottom three of the top three divisions in stock car racing. But yeah, Tony does a fantastic job, and it really has there's a cool sense at the track of, I don't know, I guess prestige would maybe be a good word. There's a Donnie Schatz. There's a lot of really good, talented race car drivers that have raced there. That track's been around for a long time. I think since 1958 or something like that. So it's cool to be able to go there, and definitely I think as anybody that watched the race saw last night, it puts on a heck of a show.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Definitely I would be a fan of the truck series gravitating towards going to more short tracks.
Are you a fan, Julius?
Oh yeah, I love it. Last night was great. Being able to go there and see all the dust flying everywhere. And honestly, when I was watching the race, that's where you find the race car drivers. You know, in those short tracks, guys are shifting, changing gears, hitting brakes. That's where you really find out who can really turn that wheel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So, Josh, Julie and I were sitting here for about a half an hour, and we were talking some Michigan football, and we've switched over to some racing. So I got to ask, I know you grew up in California. Are you a USC fan, or has Julius been able to convert you to the proper maize and blue?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question. Could you repeat it for me, bud?
Are we Go Blue or are we USC?
I'm really sorry. I still can't understand what you're saying.
Oh, I thought he was being
like
sarcastic.
A lot of noise.
No, I was just asking if Julius was able to make you a Michigan fan or if you root for USC.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. No, I mean what Julius accomplished in his professional career in the in football is quite something. So it's cool to, you know, have built a friendship up with him, and I think that definitely makes me gravitate towards probably the teams that he's been associated with. But I'll be honest, I spend so much time watching races. I'm not a huge sports fan outside of that.
I hear you.
Just don't have the time.
I could only imagine. All right, so before we talk some racing, I was doing some prep work on you, and I see you spent 13 years growing up in Nigeria. What was that like, and how did you get out there?
So I actually, I grew up in Nigeria, West Africa. I was born in California to Canadian parents, and then my parents moved the family to West Africa, and we lived there for 13 plus years, and then we moved back to British Columbia, Canada, and I started go-kart racing when I was 6. We came back for a short stint when my mom was sick to Ontario, but yeah, I mean, that was a great time in my life. I think really gave me a good world view and makes me definitely very, very appreciative for all that I have.
I could only imagine.
Yeah, so it's been good. I wouldn't change it at all. Like I said, just it makes you really appreciative when you've seen other corners of the world where people struggle to you know, just have food for the day, and you know, I get to drive a race car for a living, so that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. So you started out kart racing as a kid. Talk a little bit about your racing history and how you got to the truck series.
I started go-kart racing, maybe not what would be traditional for a stock car career. I raced go-karts on road courses, asphalt, which would traditionally be more of a open wheel route. But when I was about, and we had a lot of success in that, and honestly, at a young age, I really wanted to be in open wheel racing. But when I was about, I guess 15 or so, I kind of hit a crossroads where it was expensive to go either direction, but one was more attractive from a marketing standpoint. So we opted to go the stock car route and just sort of worked my way up the ladder from there. And every year we tried to move into a better class and faster cars and stiffer competition. And here I am.
Awesome. That's cool. So you guys had a pretty good run at Kentucky. Trucks put on a really good show there compared to what we saw with the Cup guys. Can you talk a little bit about what the race was like at Kentucky last Thursday night?
I think you're asking me about Kentucky. we had a good truck there. It wasn't bad. We struggled for, I guess it was the first segment, we struggled pretty bad. We were just too free turning off the wall, getting into three, and we got behind, and it's just hard to catch up. These races are so competitive. We had a really good stint the second stage, and we had really good speed, but unfortunately, I think we had already lost a lap, and the people we were racing against were ahead of us by a lap that we had lost in the first stage. So just sort of unfortunate, but all in all, it was a good race for us, and we were able to, you know, come home with no damage. So that's actually the truck that we're going to turn around and take to Pocono. So it's always good when you don't have any crash damage or nothing. You can work on making your equipment better opposed to having to repair it.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. So, talk a little bit about Eldora last night. You guys had Brendan Mitchell, running for you guys, and Julius told me you were actually the Jackman last night. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I suited up and went over the wall. Sort of a bit of a different scenario at Eldora, where they give you 5 minutes, well actually 3 minutes in the pits to do what you have to do, and you don't gain or lose positions on pit road. So so I joked that I was the Jackman, because that's typically a job that you need a very muscular individual for. So I joked that I was jumping in and making my debut. But
how do you do, Julius?
He did great.
He's lying to you. Actually, if you look at it, we actually sort of struggled. I barely got the whole job done in the 3 minutes, which is pretty sad when you consider our good pit crews are doing it, you know, less than 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's funny. all right, so I will be out at MIS here in a few weeks. I know you guys will be running MIS, and hopefully we'll be able to connect, maybe have a little bit more of a better interview in person. Can you talk a little bit how hard it is from running with a small team at some very different style racetracks in such a short period of time? You ran a half-mile track last week at Kentucky, six-day turnaround to a dirt track, and now going to two big speedways in Pocono and MIS.
Yeah, it's actually really challenging, you know. Each one of those tracks sort of demands a different package on the truck, whether there's holes in the nose for brake ducts, you know, what kind of brakes are we running. Eldora, you obviously had to sort of assume that you were going to, you know, destroy the body on your truck and have to replace it. So for a small team, it's really challenging, because it means you have to be more conservative with these back-to-back races. Like Kentucky's a great example of it, you know. I didn't push the envelope at Kentucky because I knew going into Eldora that we were going to tear up some equipment, and that, you know, our program would be better in the long run if we came out of there with, you know, without a scratch. So it definitely is in your mind, and you definitely have to run your own race, if you will, to have longevity. But it's probably the general race fan doesn't recognize how much goes into making a truck specific to the different style racing. And Michigan obviously is a big track. It's 2 miles, and it's more almost like a speedway for us with the truck. So we'll have a much, much different package setup wise in our truck there. And
that's awesome.
Be a lot of work, but I think we'll have a good piece there.
I'm excited to watch it. Hey, Josh, why don't you tell everyone where they can follow you on social media and keep up with Josh Rayum Racing?
Yeah, right on. Our Instagram and Twitter is RBR_teams. And then obviously myself, Josh Rayum. Probably have to Google the spelling of my last name. It's French-Canadian. But yeah, follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that, and JC Racing and all that. And we always try to put some exciting stuff up there and kind of try to keep people connected with what we have going on as a team and as we kind of continue to grow. And you know, I think everybody likes an underdog story, and that's really what we're, you know, that's what we're setting ourselves up for here, is to have the Cinderella story, because right now we're the underdog, but we definitely haven't plateaued, and we've continued to get better every week. So exciting times for us, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I will definitely be tagging you guys in the show over the week here. And you know, you talk about Cinderella. I had Brett Moffat on last week, and I called him the Cinderella of 2018, you know, a team struggling for sponsorship, but going out there getting wins. So I hope I get to call you guys the Cinderella story next year.
Absolutely. Hope so.
All right, guys. I want to thank Josh Rayum, driver of the number 33 Camping World Truck Series, for coming on the show tonight. Good luck the rest of the season. We'll see you at MIS. Oh, hold on. Julius.
Yes.
I think Julius wants to say something to you real quick.
Hey, Josh, we got to show him our secret call.
Oh, I love it. All right, Josh. We'll talk with you soon, man. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, that is going to do it for episode number 80 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Follow on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, @LapTrafficPC. Subscribe, download, all that good stuff. Big thanks to Josh and Julius for coming on the show today. Julius, where can everybody follow you guys on social media?
You can catch me on Twitter, JC Racing. You can catch me on Instagram, Julius Curry Racing. And also on Facebook, you just look up Julius Curry Racing.
Excellent. All right, that's awesome. Big props to 24 Seconds Bar and Grill for letting me come in to do the show here tonight. Next week, the usual Tuesday show, which I'm working on a guest still for that. And don't forget the extra content show next Thursday, the listener call-in show. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Make sure you tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. I'm out of here. See ya.